So I think coming from a very regimented part of the workforce, being in the military, kind of helps where I can look at it and like, I know what it's supposed to look like. How do we get there? It doesn't need to be as regimented, but a chain of command is a chain of command, whether it's a Chick-fil-A or it's a special ops. Everybody's got their role and their function, just got to play their role. Just learning what those roles are within the company and how they interact with each other, and how we can streamline processes to make it better.
Hey, I'm Devin Michael, and this is Higher Quality, the show where I sit down with the movers and shakers of talent acquisition to hear their talent triumphs, their hiring horror stories, and genuine opinions about the recruiting industry. All right, so today's podcast is with Jose Diaz. He is the Director of Talent Acquisition for Ion Management. They're a property management group with about 60 locations, and locations would be apartment complexes or something similar. We really dove into his journey because it's unique. He came from military side, actually. He was a recruiter for the Air Force Reserve, which is super unique. I've never interviewed anybody that's come from the military side of recruiting, and I would imagine it's totally different. That's what I thought coming in, but turns out it's actually not super different in the sense that you have to be efficient. You have to create great candidate experiences. The only difference is you're recruiting someone into the military versus what he calls a civilian job. So definitely take a listen if you're looking for ways to streamline and improve as a leader. He does a really good job of like depicting how to do that well, how to take a back seat and let your frontline employees give you insights that you never could have thought of. And so this is super important that we all listen to those in our business, not just listening to ourselves. And he does a great job of that. So definitely take a listen. Jose, thanks so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to get into this podcast because me and you have talked about a couple things that you're uniquely gifted at that I think the world of Higher Quality stands to gain from. But for those who don't know Jose is the Director of Talent Acquisition at Ion Management, a real estate property management group. But I always do this. I'm not good at explaining what you do, who you are, better than you. And so, Jose, why don't you tell the world who you are, what you do?
Sure. So I work at Ion Management. It is a property management company. It spans across 7 states, about 68 different farming communities. And we have about 420 employees. I've been with the company since October, and I love everything talent acquisition. We're trying to find the right people for the right job.
Awesome. So to set the kind of the, I like to give everyone an understanding of your world of talent acquisition, right? Because there's, you know, last week I talked to a high volume recruiter who had 20 recruiters doing like hundreds of jobs a month, right? But not everyone operates that way. What does your team look like and what's the kind of recruiting that you all do?
My team is basically 2 talent acquisition partners and talent acquisition coordinator, and we also have an intern currently with us. We recruit for the property operations piece of property management, which is like your leasing associates, your leasing managers, and also the property maintenance, which is your service and maintenance service technicians, service directors, things like that across the portfolio.
Gotcha. And you said that you had how many locations?
7 states, about 68 properties. 70 properties.
Wow.
7 states.
So are they like recruiting across time zone and all that?
No, not really. So we have Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, Indiana, Delaware, Ohio, the 7 states.
I wonder if I've seen any of your guys' communities. I live in Indianapolis, so I'm wondering if I've ever come across any, but I'll have to look out for it.
Sure.
But cool. We're here today. You're the Director of Talent Acquisition. Probably didn't start your career as the Director of Talent Acquisition. I know this from your LinkedIn profile, but the world might not. And so let's talk about just how you got here, what the journey has been like. You specifically came from, I think, military side, if I'm not mistaken. So a little bit of a different spin on recruiting, if I'm understanding it correctly, but we're going to dive deep into that. So tell me about kind of where you started, how you fell into recruiting, because I think everyone kind of fell into it one way or shape or another. So just tell me about your journey, kind of start to now.
Yeah, I really did fall into recruiting. I started my military career in the U.S. Air Force. Security and law enforcement, career for called security forces. I did that for 9 years. The 9-year mark, I felt like I wanted to do something different. Somebody had mentioned, hey, the Air Force really needs recruiters right now. I was told, like, hey, I think you'd be a good recruiter. For me personally, anybody who knows me outside of work knows I am not a people person. If you ask me, how to fix a problem or just tell me like what's your thoughts on X, Y, and Z. I'm good at that. I could break things down. I use a lot of analogies when I explain things. So I think as far as that goes, my strength was going into it. And so when I wanted to put in my application to be a recruiter, I told him flat out, like, I'm not a people person. I'm not going to go in there and shake hands and kiss babies, that kind of thing. But if you want me to tell somebody like why I think they should join the Air Force and how I think it can make their lives better, I can probably do that. And so going through recruiting school, they give you assignments. And at the time, my girlfriend was a long distance. And so I was like, well, I'll move closer up your way. And so I ended up coming up to Philadelphia to be a recruiter. I did ask them, like, what's the hardest place to recruit? And they were like, the Northeast. And they kind of drove me to, like, Philadelphia because I like challenges. And so I was like, give me the hardest place. And they're like, we're on this list. It's Philadelphia. So I came up to Philly, and I realized I'm pretty good at recruiting. And so I did that for the remainder of my military career. And then I transitioned to the civilian sector, worked for a financial fintech, basically a fintech real estate company, and then transition to
ground management where I am now. It's awesome. A couple of questions came up in that. So you mentioned, this is just me being curious, right? Because I don't know anything about military recruitment. Why is the Northeast the hardest?
For the military, we look at a lot of different factors. You have to have like criminal background checks. There's a certain test you have to take, which you have to battery test, physical requirements, and there's just the actual warrant to join, to serve in the military. There's a whole bunch of other, a whole list of things there's happening to use. But basically, it's who wants to. And so I grew up in the South. So a lot of people had some kind of affiliation with the military, but in the Northeast, not so much. I met candidates that have never left the city or the region. They just didn't know that much about the military, but they were looking for an opportunity. So once I was able to explain the opportunity and see if they qualify for that opportunity, it was easier for me to help them find a career in the Air Force.
Got it. Okay. And then you discovered that you have a knack for recruiting while recruiting for Air Force Reserve. What was it specifically that like made you feel like you were talented in it?
Sure. So like in the military, at least in the Air Force, they teach like a cell system. And it's almost like a script. And so I sucked at the script. It sounded very robotic to me. And then a friend of mine who was also a recruiter in the active duty component of the Air Force, which is like, just talk to them. Just talk to them in a way that like you can just relate to them, be yourself, that kind of thing. And so I kind of loosely went off script and just explained the same framework, but used just talking like a conversation, like you were talking. And that kind of helped me connect with folks much easily. And then another thing is I'm kind of analytical. Maybe I'm a nerd, but I love spreadsheets. And so like I'll look at the data reports that come out of the system, finding ways to make like charts and tables and figure out like where in my region am I getting, where the historical value shows is the best return on investment. And I was able to isolate it to like 15 zip codes in like 4 counties. Then I was like, if I hit these zip codes, I'll make the majority of my production out of these areas. That kind of helped me analyze my zone of what schools are there, what are the industries there, and really deep dive, understand like what is my zone, like what are the 4 counties that I'm in charge of. And that kind of helped me be a better sourcer, which I didn't know what that meant back then, but helped me learn like this is how I source, this is the partnerships that I need to create in order to be successful as a recruiter.
So when you think back to your journey there, obviously, it's different, right? It's probably more challenging. It's probably you got to do more convincing and whatnot. And like you said, you got to do more sourcing. But what are some of the skills that have carried over in the sense of like tactical things you still do that you did then?
I think the big thing is explaining things. I think that's one of the biggest skills that I sharpened when I left the military, because we have our own subculture, our own slang. We say things, we do our mannerisms. I could talk to another veteran, and we could joke about basic training no matter what branch they came from, and they'll get it. But trying to communicate that to the civilian sector, like, what do you do in the military? What is your career field? Why should I hire you as a recruiter? And this next company, or being able to communicate, like using analogies and explaining it and finding what is the definition of the civilian sector compared to what we call the military, I was very good at that. And I think that helped me in my career now, because I can explain things to my recruiters, like, this is how you go about talking to a different candidate who may be on the fence or might not know about the company. This is how you stand out at a job fair with one of our competitors. And almost like reverse engineering, if you want to hire veterans, this is how you communicate with veterans. So that way they can learn, like, you know, veterans are a very skilled labor force. They tend to not get as much attention as they should. So. The ION management part is a relatively newer part of the company. We've been around since 2017. So it's almost like a semi-startup environment almost, where you're trying to build infrastructure and build a framework for certain processes. So I think coming from a very regimented part of the workforce, as being in the military, kind of helps where I can look at it and be like, I know what it's supposed to look like, and it's not here. Or, well, we need to work on this. How do we get there? It doesn't need to be as regimented, but a chain of command is a chain of command, whether it's a Chick-fil-A, or if it's ION management, or if it's a special ops unit, like a pararescue unit or something like that. I mean, everybody, there's somebody at the top, and everybody's got their role and their function, just got to play their role. Just learning what those roles are within the company and how they interact with each other, and how we can streamline processes to make it better. As far as how we do things, I think that's how our business becomes more efficient.
I mean, we just talked about, to your point, streamlining processes. I feel like that's usually when I talk to directors or VPs or whoever it might be that's leading the team, they come in, that's what they usually see, is like opportunities to improve things, right? So what are some of the ways that you've streamlined things for ION since you've been a part of it? I know it's early, but maybe there's some things that either you have your eye on, you're like, I got to fix that one, or things you've already kind of have in motion that are getting fixed.
And I always tell any HR professional, no matter what your experience level, you could see something and be like, that doesn't feel right. That doesn't look right from where I'm standing. And just ask the question. So one of the things we're working on right now is just like job description, just to make sure we're not just creating roles, just to create roles. And then making sure that our folks are paying a competitive salary. So we're trying to look at career compensation benchmark studies, things like that. Building out our recruitment guides, like how do we interview? What should the recruitment process be? How do we build these workflows to just make it more effective for two recruiters to manage the workload for an industry that has a high loss rate, a high attrition rate?
Right.
So how do we offset those kind of challenges? Just trying to find ways to leverage that talent appropriately.
For sure. Do you focus more on recruiter experience or candidate experience when you're looking at these problems? Like, are you looking at, hey, I want to make sure my recruiters aren't burning out, because it's, like you said, a high attrition, like you're just basically on a hamster wheel hiring? Or do you focus on like candidate experience and making sure that everyone has an amazing process, that you're the one that they pick? And I'll make this even harder, saying that you can't say both.
So, okay. I will say I'm a firm believer in mission first, people always. So our mission in talent acquisition is to find the right talent and put them in the right job. So candidate experience is number one as far as providing our candidate experience. But you got to take care of your people too. So I think that's where it comes to, like, every site, every job cannot be the priority. There's going to be certain jobs where our investors are saying, they're like, you need to get this underperforming asset up to speed. That has to be the priority. And it's sometimes the recruiters catch a lot of flack for that, because they're like focusing on property A, but property B, C, D is struggling a little bit. But it's just saying, like, all right, now you guys dedicate 75% of your time to fill the other 25%, these other ones, but we just got to kind of navigate it. We're a little bit more this way, a little bit more that way, as the year goes on. And that's my job, is to kind of hopefully be that umbrella where they're not getting the bad rain, drop it on them, so that I can kind of shield them from that. And it is a balancing act. I always equate it to like if you're a real kayaking, that paddle can't just hit one side of the kayak, it's gonna hit both. But there's gonna be certain times where like, you gotta get it on the right side of the road, you're staring off course. And that's kind of where we try to guide our ship and how we navigate.
Gotcha. Are your recruiters able to like take people all the way through decision, like to hired, or is there hiring managers, like each building or each apartment community is a hiring manager?
Every site has a hiring manager. So they don't have the hiring authority. They basically screen those resumes, they try to schedule, what they do, they screen candidates, and they try to schedule those interviews with the hiring managers. But we also have to keep in mind the hiring managers are running around with their heads cut off too, because like depending on their site, if their site's not fully staffed, then talent acquisition is not their priority, taking care of their residents and that community, taking care of their employees is a priority. But we have, our job is to kind of send it away. It gets the person hired, so hopefully it takes that workload a little bit off that, balances that workload for your people. So it is a fine balancing act where the recruiters have to kind of press all those hiring managers, and it becomes more challenging sometimes.
No, that sounds very, very interesting, especially with a team of two, right? Like that's I don't know what the rec load is, but any team of two is probably handling quite a bit. So I could see that. On the flip side, like you've done some streamlining, where do you feel like things aren't working? I always ask this challenging question. Like, it's like, we're doing a lot of things right. Every company is probably doing something right. But I think at any point in a company's life, there's things to fix. Like what is in your mind broken that you're either banging your head against the wall, like wishing it was not that way, or you're just like, it's broken and we know it.
For a lot of companies, the tech stack tends to be one of the things that can either hurt you or help you. If you're too tech heavy, you have too many applications that people are trying to figure out, especially if you try to launch them at the same time. And I think in my current role, as I step into my role, there is a lot of systems that were implemented simultaneously. And when you're given all these tools, you're like, well, where do I start? Kind of thing. How do you train your current employees on that? How do you integrate new employees into those systems? And I think that becomes like a limiting factor as far as like how fast the business will grow within X time. So I think staggering when you implement technology, that's key. And what technology? So as far as like the head banger right now, for me at least, is the applicant tracking system. Love to get a more robust applicant tracking system, but we're kind of married to her with the product we have now. But there is also a cost associated with it that the business has to look at, like the upfront cost of launching a new system. But the return of investment is that it improves candidate experience. It automates a lot of processes. It lets the recruiters control those processes. It's more user-friendly for hiring managers and those recruiters to hopefully sift through candidates and get them in the seats.
Yeah. I think the trend that I see with ATS is none of them give you everything. They're built for what they say, to track applicants. Like, they're not always built for workflows, right? And there's a few. I think there's a few that are doing great work, like a couple of our partners, like Fountain, Greenhouse is doing good stuff, but not all of them. Like, what ATS do you guys use?
Right now, we use the recruiting gateways for UKG.
UKG, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they're heavy. We'll call it that. Like, they're heavy systems. They're very robust in ways that probably don't matter. And I'm not even the one saying this because I don't use any of them. This is just stuff I hear. So I'm just a messenger.
Yeah, for me, it's a trip just because I came from the government side. Department of Defense, we had internal systems in place that at the time I was just like, man, I wish you could do this, I wish you could do that. But I would kill to have it now. Like, we use a system in the Air Force called AFRIS-TF that was a pretty robust system that I was like, man, I'd love to have some of those features merged with some of the features I've seen on the system, like, I don't know, like Lever. And just like, I mean, we could just have that. But there's other limiting factors that I never had a chance to use in the military that I wish I could have, or cybersecurity focused. So it's not like you can get any product from a civilian sector and just use it. Everything has to be like, you know, secure or embedded. So you can never use anything to its 100% capability unless you're in that career field that is allowed to use that. So my career is in the civilian sector. My first job out of the military was like, hey, you want that? Yeah, just get it. I'm like, what, really? I can just get whatever I want. And there's no restrictions on using these applications. And I was able to get, I was the most productive I probably have ever been in my entire career. And I learned so much more about, you know, the civilian sector, a lot of business and systems and work. And I'm like, well, if we fix this workflow, this will actually go faster. And this requisition can be approved a couple hours faster. And this operator can go out like a day earlier. And you start shrinking that recruiting process, and it becomes speed to lead. How fast will you get somebody interviewed, or how fast will you get them in the door? And that's what they want. And then I also saw systems, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to touch that one. So,
hey, at least you're out there looking. One of the things that's interesting, I think people want to streamline, right? I think no one's going to be like, I don't want to streamline anything. I don't think that's no sane person would say that. As a leader who's done it a few times, what advice would you give to people that are looking to streamline their processes as they go into, you know, their next projects?
I know it's old school. I'm a big fan of like having a whiteboard and putting what you want the end state to be on the far end, and then mapping it, reverse mapping it. So like what you are right now, put what you want to be, and kind of figure out like, who are the decision makers in these workflows? How does this workflow? And then question it, like really ask like why. I would have leaders shut up and let everybody below them go first, attack it, and then get from the lowest, you know, experienced person all the way to the highest, and then start putting your input in and just see how it develops. And you can kind of slowly realize like, how do we fill this gap? And that will tell you if you need that tech or you don't. And then what the time is associated with it, what the cost is, all those kind of things.
For sure. I like the idea of that. Like, I'm in the sales side, so like as that person, you backwards math it always. But also shutting up is super important. I think that's probably, if I'm a leader listening to this podcast, the most important thing I hear is I need to shut up.
Don't get in your own way.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Because what I know about most talent acquisition leaders is they're pretty far removed from the actual day to day. Like, not to the point where they don't know what's going on, but like they're not the ones doing the phone interview, doing the screening, doing the resume review. Like, they're not the ones doing that work. And so, you know, I'm always challenged by that thought. So hopefully others are challenged by it. But we're going to switch gears and go to the fun part of the show called the hot seat segment, which is five questions that I attempt to read faster than I normally talk, which is, I rarely execute that well, but five questions, you answer back, quick hitting questions, nice and easy, and then we'll wrap up. So are you ready for your five questions?
Let's do it.
Awesome. One person that has changed your life in talent acquisition.
I'm going to go with our boss I had. His name was Marvin Green. I was a brand new recruiter. Well, not brand new. I was maybe like a year or two in. But he literally would let me sit in on big calls that he had. He would take time to explain like the strategic level, what he was doing. And the operational level and the tactical level, all the levels and how it related to me. And I think that really opened my eyes to like trying to think next level. And then so when I eventually got into that kind of role where I was a TA manager and I was in charge of a larger team, it helped me to like go to my newer recruiters and explain to them. And it kind of reteaches myself, like, show me some of your challenges. And they would show me how they work processes. And I'm like, whoa, that's changed. And it would help me go into my next meeting. Like, my recruiters are doing X, Y, and Z. Why are you trying to pile more all this extra stuff on when we can just do this? And so I think he really helped me grow me as far as being deliberate with developing your team members to let them get that experience. Don't just like, I'm the boss, I only handle my level and up. It's like, let them see what that's about, because you might spark something in them where they're just like, I want to do that too. Or they might be like, well, I don't want nothing with that. And that's okay, because I tried that as a manager, and I recruiters were like, I don't want that smoke. I don't want that. No knock against any of them. It's just one was more dedicated to their craft, where another one was like, I want to expand. Everybody has different ceilings, and he was the one that saw something in me where he's like, you know, I'm gonna spend an extra little time with him and kind of grow him. And I appreciate that.
Love it. Most challenging role you've ever had to recruit for?
I would say pararescue. It's a special ops career field in the Air Force. They have very high requirements. They're great professionals. Seeing what they have to do physically and mentally, it's very difficult to recruit grit. And you're asking somebody to physically do something when their mind is telling them, I quit. And you got to find those folks that are like mentally sharp enough to turn their body, like, keep going because we got to get this done. And that was the hardest job to work for.
Where do you go to stay updated on the latest trends and changes in the TA landscape?
Honestly, I network a lot with folks on LinkedIn, search a lot of stuff on Sherm. I follow a bunch of pages like for HR related stuff. That's basically the most where I stay up to date with what's going on in TA.
Nice. And then what's your go-to interview question if you could only pick one?
How do you operate in ambiguous or ever-changing environments? Honestly, one of the big things that as a military recruiter, I was really big on just getting to know the person. Just tell me a little bit about yourself, and just hearing more of them out, and then just seeing how they explain stuff.
Nice. Last one. What's a common talent acquisition activity that needs to die?
I hate copy pages.
I kid you not. Everyone says that.
I don't see the value in cover pages. That's my knee-jerk reaction. Since you asked, like, this is top of the dome. Like, right. What is it? I'm like, yeah, cover sheets.
Fair enough. You're not alone. Everyone hates the cover letter right now, which, understandably so. It's a letter that says to whom it may concern on the top. So, anyways, Jose, this has been awesome. I know the world is going to want to connect with you. And so I want to give you the floor to let people know how you would prefer to stay connected. If people want to learn from you, connect with you, do another interview with you, whatever it may be.
Honestly, LinkedIn, just this is the best way. Just find me on LinkedIn. And well, there's a lot of Jose Diaz's, but Jose Diaz, I am management. I'm not really much on social media unless it's just to connect on things like yours. So just to talk, your shop.
For sure. Totally understandable. But if you are out there listening to Higher Quality and enjoying this episode, make sure you like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is. I always give bonus points to Spotify users because that's what I am. But I won't blame you if you use Apple. Make sure you like, follow, subscribe, wherever you are, so that you can stay in tune with the next episodes that we drop because they're going to keep coming. And if you could also give us a review, that'd be awesome. Never asked for that before, but let's do it now. So otherwise, Jose, this has been awesome. Whoever's listening, I appreciate you. And everyone, have a good rest of your week.